Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario. You can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes. A great follow at AJ Scholes, S-C-H-O-L-Z is the last name, 2-4, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. On today's show, we're going to be reviewing the second round series of the playoffs and previewing the matchups in the conference finals. It's not going to be a long, long episode, but we're going to hit the highlights of what we've seen and kind of give you previews of what's to come. We've had a little bit of fun online with one of our favorite supporters, Daniel Negreanu at Real Kid Poker. He's kind of ribbed AJ with his efforts in the pronunciation guide with some of the trickier names in the NHL and challenging him to come up with the pronunciation of the goalies that will be on tap for the series. But I added one other player in for good measure, a winger on the Colorado side. So, AJ, I'm going to ask you to come up with your three stars of the playoffs if this goes the way that we think it might.
Yeah, so, D-Neg's given us given me a hard time there. Obviously, the easy one is Vasilevskiy. Pretty straightforward, pretty simple, all things considered. The Shesterkin, that one, I sometimes I mess up, but Shesterkin got to be a little more, pronounced on the T there. And then, Nichushkin. Yes. We just listened to that. Let's, here, I think it'll come through, Paul, here. I'll pull it up for us. We can, from the NHL media side, we'll take a listen together, make sure we have it correct here. Here we go.
Val Nichushkin.
Nichushkin. There we go. So those are the three that'll probably be the hardest here. I don't think we're going to mispronounce McDavid or McKinnon, either of those. But yeah, we'll get them right. We'll get around.
Atta boy, I love the confidence. And boy, teams that make it this far in the playoffs have got to be feeling confident too. But AJ, we're going to go through on today's episode and review the second round series. I admitted to you that I've watched more hockey this year in the postseason than in the last couple of years, for sure. The thing that strikes me is that the stars for these teams, all the teams, have really come out to play in this postseason, and it's been wonderful hockey, a high up tempo for the most part. There's been, we had a bit of a defensive focus with one of the series in the last round involving the Rangers and Carolina, and that might be the focus in the Rangers series going forward. But I look at the other series, and I think it's going to be a goal fest between Edmonton and Colorado. I don't know how you see it, but I see one being a more defensive series and the one being an absolute shootout.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely the way it at least looks on paper. Obviously, sometimes, Mike Smith is able to put a real strong game together. Same can be said of Darcy Kuemper. So there's certainly goaltenders capable in that game. And then on the flip side, there's definitely offensive pieces in that Rangers series. Mika Zibanejad is third in points among all players in the postseason with 19. And obviously Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos certainly capable of producing as well. So on paper, I think you're right, but it's why we play the game. You never know. We could get a 1-0 game in Colorado, Edmonton, followed up by, a high scoring shootout in the Rangers Lightning series. So we'll have to tune in to find out.
Okay, partner. Well, I want to get past a technical issue with our show. I'm not seeing a timer. Do you have it on your end?
Yeah, we're good, man.
Okay, good. I just want to carry on then and let's fire up these second round reviews. Beginning with the series in the state of Florida, AJ, we expected a knockdown drag 'em out affair that might go the distance, but we were on opposite sides of the issue. I thought that Florida, being the team that won the division, the Atlantic Division, and Tampa coming in third, this was a chance for the Florida Panthers to really show who was the class of the division. Instead, they got a real lesson from the two-time defending champs, and it was over very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I I was on Tampa. I thought they would win, but I definitely picked them to go seven games on this one. It's not – I did not expect a sweep, that's for sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, Vasilevskiy really turned it on. I mean, there's no arguing about that. He found a completely another gear here and was able to, you know, take it to a new level. So I think that's the key to that series. Like I said, I don't want to downplay – you know, some of the offensive pieces that the Bolts have, you know, Stamkos with two goals, Kucherov with a pair of goals, five helpers, Hedman had a decent series as well. But, it really came down to the fact that the Vasilevskiy rediscovered something. And really it was, you know, mostly that game six in the previous series, I think, is when things started to turn around. Because he was phenomenal in game seven as well. And you look, you know, that's five games in a row in which he's given up one or fewer goals, including the game four shutout, faced 49 shots and was able to keep the Panthers off the board there. So It's hard to argue that wasn't the key to that.
Absolutely. Match. And you touched on it. The mathematics really tilted in Tampa's favor, considering that Florida was the highest scoring team in the NHL's regular season. It's stunning to see that the Tampa Lightning outscored the Panthers by a mark of 13-3 over that four-game sweep. No wonder it was, lights out so quickly, but the champs really gave a lesson in strong two-way play and completely outclassed the Panthers. When you consider the big players on both teams, this really tells the story. Huberto, two assists. Barkov, one assist. Giroux, one assist. And Ekblad, no points, and a minus four. Meanwhile, for Tampa, Stamkos, two goals, two helpers. Kucherov, two goals, five helpers. Hedman, three assists and a plus two. And Vasilevskiy with the three goals against on a total of 154 shots. And it's not for the lack of opportunity. That's 154 shots over four games played. That's almost an average of 40 per game. So it really underscores who was the key element in this series, and that was Andrei Vasilevskiy. You know, Bobrovsky, for his part, was no slouch, giving up a total of 10 goals. There were three empty netters in this series. And so it was really very one-sided, but largely on the strength of an outstanding goaltending display. And boy, oh boy, this guy's done it before on the big stage, and he did it again. You got the series winner right, in calling Tampa in seven games. I had Florida winning in six, but we were both way off in terms of the total number of games played. And weren't you shocked at the way that the Panthers offense just couldn't answer the bell?
I don't know if I'd go shocked all the way to shocked. I mean, we've seen this from Vasilevskiy before, so I won't say shocked, but I expected more from them, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Well, in any case, it's lights out on them. It could be attributed to the fact that they didn't have that much experience in the postseason as a club. And what better way to learn than from the two-time defending champs? So that's their takeaway, I guess, after almost a President Trophy winning season that's gone down by the wayside here. And up next, we look at the series that I talked about implied off the top. One of the defensive struggles of the second round was the series between the New York Rangers and Carolina Hurricane. The Hurricanes were a very strong defensive outfit all season long. They went into this series, AJ, without their number one goalie, and we both thought that was going to be a decisive thing, because at the other end of the ice, you have a guy that's going to be in the discussion for Vezina Trophy accolades in Igor Shesterkin. We both thought this would be a long series. You nailed it, though, with the Rangers coming out on top in seven games. I had the Rangers winning in six. And until the last game, no team won on the road. In fact, I saw a stat that had to revert back to 1962 when the Maple Leafs played 12 playoff games. They didn't win a game on the road. They won all their games at home in that playoff run. And Carolina was mimicking this in these playoffs until game seven. And that was the decisive one. In the last two games, actually, the Rangers won going away. But before that, they had five games in this front end of the series that were just back and forth, nip and tuck. There wasn't much to choose from between these two teams. So pretty early on, I thought it was going to go the distance. But You nailed it in seven games. So tell me why you felt that it was going to go seven and that the Rangers were going to win.
Yeah, you know, I think we both, I know I wasn't too high on Antti Raanta, but I do think it's important to point out his numbers were not bad. 9.22 was the save percentage, 2.26 goals against average, one shutout in there. So really, he was not bad. I thought the Carolina Hurricanes would match up really well from a forward complement with the Rangers. I did agree with you that the Rangers had a bit of an edge, and I think we saw that in the likes of, you know, while Carolina had defensive guys, they don't have an Adam Fox who had two goals and six assists. Obviously, Shesterkin give the edge to him in terms of net mining. So I really did think the Rangers would win this one, and I just thought it would be close. And yeah, I do think it's important to note that, you know, it's just that Antti Raanta did not have a terrible series, really put up pretty decent numbers.
Absolutely. And there was talk right up to the last that maybe Freddie Anderson could play in that seventh game. But how you make the switch when you've committed to one goalie and he served you well in that whole series, I don't think you can second guess the fact that they started him. And he you know, he had a great series, as you said, with the numbers that he posted. So there shouldn't be any second guessing about putting in a cold Freddie Anderson and hoping that he would deliver something of a different outcome for Carolina. They were outplayed. When you look at the fact, comparison of the big boys on both teams, Mika Zibanejad had 8 points in this series, 4 goals and 4 helpers. Chris Kreider, 3 goals, 1 assist. Artemi Panarin was a guy that kind of underperformed for me for the Rangers, but he had a goal and 3 helpers. Adam Fox was maybe their best player offensively with 2 goals and 6 assists from the defensive position. We mentioned Shesterkin allowing only 12 goals against in the total of the 7 games that he appeared in. But consider on the flip side, with the exception of Sebastian Aho, who had 2 goals, 4 helpers, Toivo Teravainen, 2 goals, 2 assists. That's from your top line winger in a 7-game series. So they probably expected more from him. Evgeny Svechnikov, he was on the second line, 1 goal, no helpers. So really, a guy that had a very strong regular season was almost nowhere to be found in this series. And then on the back end, their linchpin on the back end, Tony DeAngelo, was limited to only 2 assists. So you compare that to the 8 points that Fox got, and you see a real disparity there. So when you start to dive into the numbers, you see that while it was a 7-game finish, I think this series was done after almost game 5 when the Rangers won the last 2 games going away, AJ.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a good – I mean, game six would have been a home game for them. So, you know, they got that one and brought it in game 7. I, you know, with how the series went, with every team winning at home throughout the series, I was entering game 7 thinking maybe I was wrong. Maybe Carolina was going to pull it off. I agree with your call. I wouldn't have put Freddie Anderson in for game 7 if he was available. Might have considered putting him in for the next round if they had made it. But yeah, I think I went into it being, okay, home side's just going to win this one out. But the Rangers obviously brought it. They came early in that game 7 and didn't let up at all.
And AJ, we didn't see the end of goalie issues in this round. When we consider the St. Louis-Colorado series, the Blues were a real formidable foe for Colorado early on in this set, but the worm turned in game 3 when Jordan Binnington went down. I think the St. Louis chances of extending the series, maybe even possibly winning it, went out the window. We were both on Colorado in a big way in this series. I had them winning in 6, Colorado. You had them winning in 5. The result was a 6-game series, so I got that part right. But the fact was that Colorado outscored St. Louis 22-18 on the series, implying that it was a closely contested. But I really do think that things changed when Binnington went out and Husso was forced back into the fray. Not that Husso's a bad goalie. He actually outperformed Binnington, I'll say, in the regular season. But Binnington did have the hot hand in the playoffs, and Husso just couldn't match that level. And you could see St. Louis really start to sag a little bit as the series went on.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree that it definitely turned when Husso came back in. You know, I don't know what happened to be blunt about him in the postseason, because you're right. He was really good during the regular season. I mean, you're talking 40 games played, 25-7-6 was the record, two shutouts there, 2.56 goals against average. I mean, there's going to be plenty of teams that are, you know, interested in his services next season. He's set for free agency here, so we'll see if he's back with the Blues. I just would be, you know, I'd be surprised if he is, honestly. Why battle? I mean, I guess if he likes it in St. Louis, there's other factors there, but, you know, why battle Binnington with the risk of not, where you could certainly go somewhere else and, you know, walk in as the presumptive starter? After what happened in the postseason, I would say that's not the case. He's definitely not the presumptive starter heading into next year. He'll have to win out a battle with Binnington, possibly split time along the way as well. So I agree that that was definitely the turning point of the series and really changed the tone. You know, it seemed like Colorado just had way more, you know, on Husso. They just were able to do more against him and really put up the numbers.
Yeah, one more note on Husso. He's a pending free agent, AJ. He's a pending UFA, so he has an opportunity to really shop himself around the league to see what's out there and available. He might even get an undisputed number one opportunity somewhere else. So really curious to see how that whole situation plays out. There's three or four goalies that are going to be testing the market that are probably in that same caliber range of a guy who kind of took the reins in St. Louis this year and had a fine season. So that's a storyline for the offseason, and we'll get to that in one of our later episodes this summer with a look at free agency. But we're going to continue our look at this series with some of the numbers that I see from the top players, AJ. Again, the top players delivered for the winning team, no surprise. Nate MacKinnon, 3 goals, 4 assists. Landeskog, 3 goals, 2 helpers. Rantanen, 1 goal and 5 assists. Kadri with 4 goals, 3 assists. Kale McCarr with 3 assists. Maybe a lower point total for him that I would have forecast. And on defense, he was matched with Devin Taves with 1 goal and 2 helpers. Kemper allowed 17 goals in the 5 games played for Colorado. So really not a factor in nailing it down. This was a case of Colorado outscoring any issues that they might have had elsewhere. Look at what St. Louis's top guys did, though. Ryan O'Reilly with 4 points. Perron with 4 goals. Tarasenko was limited maybe a little more than we thought he might be with 1 goal and 2 helpers. Justin Falk had a very nice series, I thought, with 1 goal and 3 assists. And as I say, Binnington going out in game 3, the decisive factor, we both see it that way. AJ, why don't you take us through the Edmonton-Calgary series, what you saw and how it wound up being shorter than what I thought for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest surprise was, you know, in my opinion at least, was the lack of goaltending for Calgary and specifically Markstrom here. You know, it kicked off with that 15 goal, just monstrosity of a game. He actually, you know, Markstrom actually came up on the winning end of that one. But after that, it was all downhill. But you look at his numbers, never gave up fewer than 4 goals in that 5-game series. So really, you know, I mentioned, you know, on DraftKings earlier today that Darcy Kemper wasn't very good. I still stand by that. I don't think he was, but he was better than Markstrom. And that was just enough. I mean, we're talking just offensive explosions from both sides of the ice. Ultimately, you know, Edmonton outscored Calgary 25-20, but you have McDavid with 12 points in the series. Draisaitl with 17. Zach Hyman comes in with 6 goals, you know, on the other side. Johnny Gaudreau with 6 points, Lindholm with 4 points, Tkachuk with 3 goals, although all of those came in the same game. So you could point to him kind of drying up offensively from there. So we'll have to see, you know, what the next series looks like. But if there is one of these two series that could put up these kind of goal numbers, it's certainly the Edmonton-Colorado series that could be this heavy.
Yeah, and in terms of the stats, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers outscored Calgary 25-20 in this series. It was 9-6 the other way after the first game, so really tilted big time. So I want to highlight the top scorers in this set. There were some crazy numbers, and we'll begin with the Edmonton Oilers. And I'm very impressed by the top two guys there. Obviously, everybody was. Connor McDavid, 3 goals, 9 assists. And Leon Draisaitl, for a guy who was alleged to be playing on 1.5 legs in this series, 2 goals and 15 assists. That's incredible. He set a club record, an NHL record, in fact, with 5 straight three-point efforts in the postseason. And I had to do a double take when I thought, geez, you mean Lemieux and Gretzky never did that in some of their long playoff runs? Even Doug Gilmore with a couple of long playoff runs in Toronto, I thought might have been a contender for that record. But no, it was 5 straight by Draisaitl. And by the end of the series, he looked pretty healthy to me. But the telltale sign, AJ, that kind of tilted the series was that some of the other support cast, I won't even call them secondary scorers, when you consider these are all top 6 players on the Oilers team. Hyman with 6 goals and 2 assists. This was a shock for me. This guy in 5 previous playoffs played well for the Maple Leafs, but he didn't even tally a total of 8 points in total in those 5 playoff rounds. Got them in 1 series here in 5 games. An outstanding run for him. Evander Kane leads the NHL in goals for the goal scoring in the playoffs. He got 5 of them in the set and 1 helper. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a guy who doesn't get mentioned with the top players in Edmonton, but he really should, in my opinion. He has got the pedigree, a former first overall draft pick like some of the other guys, but 6 points in his account for this series as well. And if you go to the other side, Johnny Gaudreau, 1 goal and 5 assists. He got 3 of those points in the first game, but was very quiet after that. Ditto for Elias Lindholm with 2 goals and 2 assists. And Matthew Tkachuk, 3 goals, all in game one. He was held to 1 assist beyond that. So a stunning stat when you consider Jacob Markstrom, 24 goals against in 5 games played. That was the telltale sign. They just couldn't keep the puck out of the net, and it was his worst stretch of the season, partner.
Yeah, I mean, there's no arguing that. I think we, kind of have hammered him enough, Markstrom, that is. He just wasn't good enough, unfortunately.
All right, partner. Well, that takes care of what we saw. Now we're going to take a bit of a break and come back to you with our preview of the conference final matchups as well. We're going to throw in a DFS segment. We haven't done it for a while with the sporadic nature of the broadcast in the postseason. But the fact is now we have a game on tap tonight, and we're going to go to a showdown type format with both FanDuel and DraftKings picks. And we'll be happy to wrap up our show with that segment. But for now, stay tuned. We're going to pause for messages, and then we'll be back with the preview of the third round, the conference finals. You're listening to PuckCast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire signature NHL hockey pod.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, we're back. You're back listening to Paul Bruno and AJ Scholes, the dynamic duo of RotoWire's hockey podcast with Statsman and AJ is what it's called. And we're very pleased to represent RotoWire in this format for sure. It's been a pleasure for me all year long. It's the fifth year that you and I, AJ, have worked on this thing together. And we're hopeful of coming back with this format. You're able to watch us.
I think it's six, isn't it, Paul?
It is six. You're right, actually. It is. And so, but we're testing a format now where we're showing this thing live, and we're next year we hope to start this way too. And it'll be very interactive when we get the fantasy hockey element back in full swing at the start of the season with people planning their strategies and so on. And we'll be welcoming questions and answers live during the broadcast. So looking forward to that, another step in the growth of our show. And you're right. It's the seventh year, the end of the seventh year that I've done this thing and six with you, partner. And it's been a blast. So I want you to take us to the reminder of how our listeners can get in touch with us on a weekly basis going forward. And even in the off season, there'll be opportunity to consult with us about how you plan, start planning for next year and any questions they may have. How do they get in touch with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So primarily get in touch with us on Twitter. You can follow me at AJSchultz24. You can follow Paul at Statsman22. All of our, you know, stuff, we always retweet out if we're doing this live, if we're over on DraftKings on their daily show, we'll tweet out, you know, retweet those so that you can catch us on those places as well. And then obviously, if you want to just interact with us, questions, comments, concerns, hit us up again at AJSchultz24 for any questions you have for myself, at Statsman22 for questions for Paul. And we can get into those with you, you know, throughout the off season. If you have, you know, keeper questions coming up, trying to decide who you're going to keep for next year, we're happy to help and dive in on those with you.
Okay, partner, let's get into it. The conference final on the east side, the New York Rangers versus the Tampa Lightning. You're talking about a New York Rangers team that's done a rebuild on the fly. It wasn't even so long ago that they sent a letter to their season ticket holders saying, we're going through a rebuild. It's going to involve some pain. And we hope that you should be patient with us. But, man, it seems to have happened faster than I thought it would, AJ. And here they are. They find themselves in the third of a round of a nice playoff run, and they're opposing the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. You'd have to think they're going in as somewhat of an underdog in this set. But when you look over the regular season slate between these two teams, I was rather surprised to find the Rangers swept the three games played, outscoring Tampa by the tune of 10-4, so handling them rather easily, I would suggest, on the regular season. But anybody who thinks that the Lightning is going to be an easy out is sadly mistaken. I do think the Rangers have an excellent club. They kind of match them across the board. When we get into the matchups of goalies, defense, and forward, you'll see that it's not too wide a margin, I don't think, at least in two of the categories. And why don't we start that analysis, AJ, by you taking us through the head-to-head matchup in the Nets.
Yeah, Andre Vasilevsky, fresh off of two Stanley Cups, looking for a third against the youngster, relative youngster, Igor Shesterkin. I think it'll be a good matchup here. I mean, both guys have looked very solid during the postseason. Numbers have been great. Vasilevsky, obviously, with the edge here, 9.32 was his save percentage, 2.22 the goals against average, slightly better than the numbers from Shesterkin. Obviously, the other factor here, don't forget, Igor got pulled in two games during that opening series, obviously seems to have put that behind him and has improved steadily from there. So While I do think, generally speaking, they're two evenly matched goalies, I personally will give the edge to Vasilevskiy. He's got two Stanley Cups behind him and has been completely unbeatable in his last five games, and is, you know, just playing some of the best hockey of his career, which is hard to say when you have a guy with his name on the cup twice.
Absolutely. Well said, AJ. I don't know that you can show much of a disparity between the two guys, but it's the rings. And I'm reminded of Patrick Waugh's comment. He's got two rings in his ears, so he can't hear what other people are saying about him if they criticize him. But the same could be said for Andrew Vasilevskiy. I don't know anybody who would criticize his play in this postseason, though he did. I can't believe it's the same goalie we're seeing who gave up at least three goals in each of the first six games of this playoff year. But he's really buttoned things down in the last five, as you highlighted earlier in the show. So I don't think we're going to see high-scoring action here on the DraftKings show. I said that this might be a series where you hammer the under in terms of the goal total in the games played on a nightly basis here until I see something different. I don't know how either team scores a ton of goals on these two outstanding netminders. In terms of the defense structures, I'm going to start the analysis there, AJ, looking at the depth on the blue line for the New York Rangers. Of course, their linchpin is Adam Fox. I mentioned he's coming off an outstanding series in the most recent round against Carolina, but he's not the only offensive threat they have here. They've got Jacob Trouba's had a very nice playoff run. Ryan Lindgren and Keandre Miller also capable of factoring into the scoring. And what a baptism for a young Braden Schneider, who has had a cameo on their third pairing. Not bad. Not a bad way to wind up your first season in the NHL to be poised to play in the conference finals here. And he's insulated by the veteran defender Justin Braun on this blue line. On the flip side, you've got Tampa. AJ, why don't you share with our listeners and viewers what you think about the Tampa Blue?
Well, yeah, similarly to the Rangers, you know, the big name up top kind of leading the way offensively, and that's Victor Hedman. Currently third in defensive scoring during the postseason here with 10 points. That trails Adam Fox, obviously, along with Cale Makar. You know, the knock here is I do think the Rangers have a little bit more guys capable of producing offensively. You know, you look at the Lightning, and after Hedman, next you've got Ryan McDonough with 4 points, Mikhail Sergachev with just 4 points. And he's a player that I think for a while we've been expecting to be more offensively solid. That hasn't necessarily been the case. You know, on the flip side, the numbers aren't huge, but there's a few more guys that can contribute. Keandre Miller's got 5, Ryan Lindgren with 4, Jacob Trouba with 4. So really pretty steadily built. If I had to pick an edge for offensive mindset, I might give it to the Rangers. But you've got a couple of guys here in Ryan McDonough, Zach Bogosian, Eric Cernak, who are shutdown defenders to the best. And in fact, the Lightning went with 7 defensemen dressing Jan Ruta for their most recent game as well, something they could continue to do if Brandon Hagel and Braden Point remain out of the lineup, which leads me into, I'll just dive right into the Lightning forwards here. That is a big concern. Brandon Hagel was on the ice for practice today, didn't finish it, and then did come back out after practice to do some individual work. So I would say his status definitely is considered a game time call heading into game one there. Braden Point was not seen at practice at all today, so I would guess that he won't be available. So that leads us with Stamkos, Cirelli, and Kucherov as the top line. Andre Palat, Nick Paul, and Alex Killorn is the second line. Look, they produced perfectly well. These were the same lines that we saw, top six lines that we saw without Point during the previous series. So it obviously didn't hurt them too much. Of course, you'd like to get a Braden Point back. The question is, you know, does Riley Nash step into the lineup if Brandon Hagel is not able to go? Do they continue dressing 7 defensemen, or do they bring somebody else in? So there are some definite questions for the depth for the Lightning as they start to pile up a few more injuries here.
Absolutely. And you consider the fact that their fourth liners in some of the games they've played, Patrick Maroon and Corey Perry have played 6 or 7 minutes. I'm going to suggest that with the injury to Hagel, that you're going to see the minutes on those guys rise a little bit more. Nick Paul's going to be a key guy for them too, centering that second scoring line. He's a pending UFA as well, so this is a real good cameo opportunity for him to advertise his wares on a big stage, but he's had a fine playoff for them too. And that second line with wingers Palat and Killorn, nothing to sleep on. But the key is going to be that top line. Can the Rangers find a way to corral Kucherov and Stamkos particularly? On the flip side, we're going to look at the Ranger offense, and they had a very good playoff run from Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider, continuing his scoring exploits on the regular season. Frankie Vatrano's been a guy who's been riding shotgun with these guys and a very good DFS value play for much of the postseason. I'm looking for Panarin to break out of a bit of a scoring slump. He'll be a key to driving the second line, AJ. And you talk about a great addition that they made at the deadline. Andrew Kopp has had an outstanding playoff. He, too, is a pending UFA, but he's really may have found a home with the Rangers. I don't know how they would part company with the way he has had such a nice run with them, really solidifying that second line, which is centered by Ryan Strome, a formidable six-pack there. And I would say with the bumps and bruises that the Tampa has, I mean, maybe you can make a case that the Rangers have a bit of an edge in terms of the offensive depth when you figure they can ice a third line that's made up of former first draft pick overall Alexis Lafrenière, Philip Hedel, and Kaapo Kakko, three youngsters with a lot of offensive upside. But I wonder if the Tampa club puts a checking unit on them, they might flip the script and counterpunch these guys to death and maybe they expose them a little bit with their inexperience. The fourth line opportunists for the Rangers are their tough guy, Ryan Reeves. Barclay Gaudreau, a guy that Tampa's very familiar with since he cut his teeth with them in their successful run for jumping ship. And then Tyler Mott rounding out their 12 forwards. They even have some experience in the wings should anything falter there. So I think, on the whole, AJ, correct me if I'm wrong or oppose me if you wish, but I think the Rangers have a slight edge in overall depth. And maybe overall talent too.
Definitely, I think in depth with point out. But yeah, I don't know if I'd go totally on talent, but definitely more up and comers, right? Like it's kind of veterans versus young guys. Not that each team doesn't have a mix of both. Obviously, Mika Zibanejad is not a youngster, but yeah, I do think on depth. And then I'll just convey one interesting story I saw today. Andrew Kopp reportedly told Chris Drury, sorry about your first round pick after they won the series last night as part of the condition for him being traded from Winnipeg. If the Rangers won two playoff rounds and Kopp played in 50% of those games, he's played in all of them, that pick upgraded to a first rounder. So unfortunately, the Rangers lost a first rounder, but I don't think anybody within the organization or fan base is complaining about that one.
AJ, I think we're in agreement here that we're going to give Tampa the edge in this series overall. I call them in six games. I just think there's too much experience here, and the Rangers might be looking around thinking, boy, look how far we've come. And the Rangers are, the Lightning, on the other hand, are saying, well, we're halfway home. It's different perspectives, and it might be the telltale sign that propels Tampa to winning this series in six games, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, I've been saying, you know, I've been doing playoff preview articles. We've been doing this playoff preview show. I've been repeating the same mantra over and over again. Don't stop betting on the Lightning until they prove you wrong, right? And so there's no reason to change course now. I'm going to stick with them. I got them in six as well. But certainly I have no worries if it goes to seven. I think they can close it out that way too. I'm not expecting another sweep by any stretch of the imagination here, but I do think they have the edge, especially with the way Vasilevskiy is playing right now.
And AJ, as a nod to you and your knowledge of goaltending, I've called you the goalie guru in this show in the past, and we'll lead off our analysis with a look at the two goalies, or maybe more than two goalies, that'll show up in this series that we're going to talk about next, and that's the Colorado Edmonton tilt, a series that where in the regular season Edmonton held these guys in check offensively. There were a total of only 17 goals scored in the three games played, and Colorado won the series 2-1 in the regular season. but tight games pretty much. And I wonder if we're going to see the scoring explosion that we both anticipate. But the goalie comparison is an interesting one. Why don't you tell us all about your observations there?
Yeah, so I'll start with Colorado and Darcy Kuemper. You know, I said previously, his numbers weren't great in this series. 2.77 was the goals against average. Obviously got the four wins that they needed, but really seemed inconsistent. I mean, you've got the five goals against on 30 shots in game, game five there. Two or three goals allowed in every other one. So really, you know, not the best play. And I think he needs to be better if they're going to get through this. You know, we'll touch more on the offense, but in my opinion, Colorado is less built to overcome some goaltending woes than the Edmonton Oilers are. And I think Edmonton is going to need to overcome those woes when you consider you've got Mike Smith, who technically is on a four-game winning streak here, but again, his numbers in this series, not great. 3.40 goals against average was that. Now, even if you take that first game out, he's still at a 2.74 for the four games that he won there. I would be surprised if we see anybody else here. I know Koskinen came in during that when he got pulled in game, when Smith got pulled in game one. But at this point, I wouldn't expect we're going to see Koskinen or Francouz unless that those guys are coming in replacement in a game. I would not expect either one to start. It's going to be Smith against Darcy Kuemper. And really, Kuemper, in my opinion, is the linchpin here. Smith, if he struggles, the offense can overcome that. Kuemper, not so much. They could maybe for a game or two, but overall, they're going to need him to play better against a high-powered offense.
What I got to say about Mike Smith, I'm more of a fan of his than you've been, but that doesn't mean he's one of my favorites by any means. We're talking about a 40-year-old guy who's pressed into service with a long playoff run. I'm wondering how many Edmonton fans are holding their breath that this guy can just continue to play game in, game out at the high level that he's had to play in some of these contests. I mean, the stage is no bigger in this round than it was the last, really, other than your one round closer to the playoffs. But playing in that Battle of Alberta, he had to raise his game, and he did answer the bell with four nice performances to round it out. But there is a specter of that first one when he got absolutely blitzed. And I think that we could see that early on in this round. And I wonder how he's going to react when that avalanche, I'll call it, comes his way. Because I've seen so many games with Colorado this year where they just kind of overwhelm the opposition and they've driven more than their share of goalies out of the net. I think we're going to see that at some point early in this series. And I'm wondering how Smith will react to that. That's really a bit of a wild card that I'm going to forecast early on in this series. But more in terms of looking at the blue line here, again, the composition of both blue lines is very intriguing to me. They've both got a wealth of offensive pop from the back end. You look at Edmonton, and they've separated their defense to have one very good offensive piece on each of the pairings. Darnell Nurse with Cody Ceci, who's been a very good stay-at-home defenseman, a revelation for me, the way he's played again in this postseason. But you had a different perspective with his growth in Pittsburgh before he came to Edmonton showing this. I didn't see it. So I'm really impressed with what I've seen out of Ceci on the defensive side of the puck. Duncan Keith is kind of showing everybody why Edmonton was willing to take on his big contract. He's insulated Evan Bouchard and helped him elevate his play. He's been the most surprising component of the Edmonton blue line, I'll say, and has almost parlayed that into a lot of appearances on the top power play unit, which has enhanced his DFS value. And a guy who he shares that with is on the third pairing, Tyson Barrie. He's playing with the baggage smasher Brett Kulak, insulating him. So really good look on the Edmonton blue line on paper. But, boy, they still give up a lot of shots on goal. They'll reward you at the other end of the ice with the value that the three offensive pieces bring to the table, in my opinion. On the flip side, what do you see out of the Colorado blue line, AJ?
Well, I think the difference here in this matchup could be, you know, the blue line. You mentioned – there are a decent number of, you know, options here for Edmonton. Cody Ceci with 7 points, Bouchard with 8, but that 8 points is second best, arguably tied for second best when you look at Colorado's point production, led by Cale Makar, 13 points in 10 games, just ridiculous numbers from him. And then they have Devin Taves with 8 points, 4 goals as well. And you want to go even deeper here, Bowen Byram with 6 assists. Josh Manson's got 5 points in the postseason. So I think Colorado has a lot better offensively minded team in terms of the blue line here, and it's going to be a factor for them. And then they throw out there the, I'll put in quotes, the Johnson brothers. I know they're not actually related, but you've got Eric Johnson and Jack Johnson, capable shutdown guys. Again, I talked last time we did this that, you know, Jack Johnson in limited minutes can be a really good defensive option. You just can't be putting him out there for 20, 25 minutes a night. That's not going to work. But if you've got him out there for 17, 18, something like that, he's certainly capable of helping shut down that defense. And even in that game 7, they only put him out there for 9 minutes, but that's 9 minutes less that, you know, Cale Makar or somebody has to be out there. So I think they've got a good group here. I like their depth. If they want to, they've got Ryan Murray or Curtis McDermott available. Obviously, unfortunately, they won't have Sammy Girard for the rest of the playoffs after that chest injury for him. And boy, is there anything there? There's only a handful of injuries. I was talking about this earlier with somebody, only a handful of injuries that sound worse than broken sternum. That just does not sound good. Anything worse than that usually starts with the word ruptured, in my opinion, but broken sternum definitely up there.
Yeah, that's a big blow to their blue line and kind of almost levels the playing field between it in a comparison on the blue line for my money. In terms of forwards, boy, oh boy, we're going to see some excellent forwards in action in this postseason. Talk about star power. Look at Colorado able to ice Gabriel Landeskog and Nate McKinnon on one line, Nazem Kadri and Mikko Rantanen on a second line. The guys that will provide you DFS value in these regards are Arturi Lehkonen, will round out the top line on the right wing, and Valeri Nichushkin. I should have let you say that. You handle it.
Too late. It's already yours.
It's out there. So Nichushkin will round out the second line, and he's been a real revelation, finally finding his overall game in Colorado, and what a great place for him to land on the second line with Kadri and Rantanen. The third line, it's got some offensive punch, too, when you consider JT Compher factored in to one of the games in the last round. And Andrei Burakovsky is a guy that they could plug into the top six anytime they want. Nicholas Aubé-Kubel is a bit of a step down in terms of rounding out the three lines. You know a little bit about him, seeing him with player Penguins for years as a Philadelphia Flyer. But Andrew Cogliano, insurance on the fourth line. Darren Helm, a veteran as well. Logan O'Connor, youngster, rounding out the top 12 here in Colorado. There's a ton of firepower in the top six, but it's not maybe not even limited to that with Compher and Burakovsky on a third unit, AJ. And how will Edmonton counter these guys with the look on their offense?
Yeah, right now they are rolling with what we'll call the two-headed monster on that first line with Evander Kane and then Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl lining up together. That's how they've been deploying, at least at the start of games. I think, you know, it gives them all kinds of firepower. And so far it's been working out. You mentioned Zach Hyman's 6 goals. So now he's second line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jesse Puljujarvi as that second line. But they have the ability to move Draisaitl back. They could put, you know, there's Puljujarvi could play on that top line. Kaylor Yamamoto, Zach Cassian have all spent time on that top line. So they have plenty of options there. And then again, more options. If they move Draisaitl back to the second line, they could put Nugent Hopkins on the wing, whether the first or second line, or drop him to a third line role and give themselves some more depth. So the flexibility of this team from those top six guys, I think could create matchup problems for Colorado. But you want to talk putting all your bags in one basket. As you mentioned, Paul, Lehkonen is getting the looks lately on that top line.
Yeah.
But easily, Mikko Rantanen slots right back in there for their MGM line, if you will. So that's certainly a possibility. I would guess we'll see some changes depending on the outcome of game one, possible changes right away for game two as they try and play this mismatch game.
You know what? I want to see right off the face-off, the two big lines facing off against one another. Let's not pussyfoot around and third line whisper. I want to see power against power and keep them on for 2 minutes to start the game just to set the tone. I want to see it. I can't wait. And boy, oh boy, I hope that this series lives up to the offensive hype that I'm building up, at least in my mind, AJ. In terms of the way I see it playing out, I think it could go the distance. I think Edmonton's really riding a wave right now. And if Colorado were to lose one of these first two games, that might really tilt the scales Edmonton's way. So very important for Colorado to get off on the right foot tonight. I think this series is going to go the distance, partner. I think it's Colorado's to lose. I think they're going to win it in seven games. And home ice will be a pivotal factor for them, I do think.
Yeah, I thought about going in five here with Colorado. You know, take the two at home, split the series on the road, and then close it out in game five. And I think that's still a decent option here. But ultimately, for me, I'm going to go six. I think it takes one more game. But I think we're both on the same page here. Really exciting here today, Paul. We're both on the Lightning in six, and then I take the Avs in six, you take the Avs in seven. So not a lot of disagreement from us today. But yeah, I just think, you know, this has been set up for, you know, the team that's been trying to get there, the up and coming Colorado Avalanche. Is this the year they finally push through versus the Lightning, who are going for number three? And I think the storylines will be great. Matchup will be great. We have to get there first, though. Let's not sleep on the Rangers. The Oilers, I think both teams are capable and are going to make the other two squads work for it.
Absolutely. And AJ, I know I'm pretty excited about getting back to the fantasy portion of our show where we draft lineups. Again, we didn't get a chance to do it on our last episode. And so we're back with a look at FanDuel lineups and DraftKings lineups with a bit of a twist in the postseason, where we're going for kind of a showdown format where you pick one player as effectively your team captain, and his point total gets a 50% boost on the FanDuel side. And you can remind our listeners on the DraftKings side of how things work. But we're picking a five-pack of players and not necessarily even including a goalie. At least I'll tip my hand and say I didn't include one in tonight's game, which features Edmonton and Colorado. I wonder how your team lines up on the DraftKings side. So why don't you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, so DraftKings, as our friend Jesse Cofield always says, 1.5 times the salary, 1.5 times the points there for your captain. You're picking six players overall for DraftKings here. And I agree with you, Paul. With tonight's slate, I wouldn't touch a goalie. Tomorrow, if I'm playing showdown, I might consider taking Vasilevsky or Shesterkin, possibly even captaining one of those two guys if I think they're going to put together a strong game. But for tonight, I'm not touching the goalies. I think we could see a goal fest. And I want to give myself some room here to build. And to do that, I go down and I captain Gabriel Landeskog. He comes at 11-4 as the captain. Definitely a cheaper option compared to what you could pay up for McDavid or MacKinnon. But by paying down for my captain, for a guy like Landeskog, who has plenty of goals so far in the postseason, I actually can include McDavid and MacKinnon in my lineup here. So I get Landeskog captain, McDavid 10-8 is the salary, MacKinnon 10-6. I can even throw in Leon Draisaitl at 9,200 here. So the flexibility by paying down for captain is there. Obviously, it may not be the best cash game play because you're taking more risk, not including one of those top guys, but you get all three in there. And then I have two basically value plays based on position to round out my lineup. We mentioned Arturi Lehkonen. He's playing on that top line with MacKinnon and Landeskog. 4,800 lets me stack that whole first line. And then at just 2,000, which is a really low salary for a showdown slate, you can get Jesse Puljujärvi in there. Again, he's not on the top line, but he's playing with Nugent Hopkins and Zach Hyman, certainly capable of getting points with them. So really, I've got an entire lineup built of top six players here. And again, I stress the roster flexibility I got at the start by captaining Landeskog instead of one of those more high-priced options.
Yeah, the FanDuel setup is slightly different in terms of the salary penalty that you pay on the DraftKings side. There is no such animal on the FanDuel side. A little bit different. So you pick your captain. It's just 1.5 times the points, and you pay his salary at the rate that it's assigned in. So my captain is Nate McKinnon. $15,000 his price tag going in, and I'm not going 4 players to 1. I'm going 3 players to 2 in my matchup. There's only five spots on the FanDuel side. I'm going to have Evander Kane, the top goal scorer in the playoffs, as my top rep from the Edmonton side at $11,000. And then I throw in Mikko Rantanen for $11,500 as the sidekick to Nate McKinnon on the power play. And he'll get a lot of reps at even strength with him, too. I know they mix it up a little bit with that trio, including Landeskog, from time to time. But they'll be on the ice a lot together, and I think there's going to be a lot of goals scored by Colorado tonight. So I'll plug him in for $11,500. Then, in a bit of a twist, AJ, I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm going to go with a couple of defensemen who factor into the offense for both clubs, and I get them in because their salaries are low enough that I can get both of them in play. Devin Toews is a guy I've been a high on throughout the postseason. He's had a very nice run the whole year in Colorado with his points per game on the season. He's getting like 0.8 points per game all year long. He's about 90 games played so far this season. So really good year for him, and I expect it to continue in this round. And then I mentioned Evan Bouchard, AJ, the cheapest guy in my lineup at $8,500. He's going to get some looks on the power play for Edmonton. He's getting a regular shift with one of their top scoring lines on a regular basis in much of the minutes that he's playing too. So I figure he's going to find a way to the score sheet as well. So out of my five pack, I've got 2 defensemen in there. I wonder what you think about that strategy.
Well, I like the Toews play. I'm not as high on Bouchard, but the salary savings obviously gives you some options there.
Yeah, so that's really what guided me, because I was left with so little money. I thought, who could I plug in as a bit of a difference maker? And I landed on Bouchard. That's really how that strategy came to fruition more than anything else. Well, partner, that's our analysis of what happened in round 2. What we expect in round 3, and wouldn't it be something if the teams flipped the script and we saw two or three goals total tonight in this game, and then maybe a shootout at Madison Square Garden? But I really think we're going to see a lot of goals tonight, not so many tomorrow night. And I wonder if you see the thing playing out the same way as we open these series.
Yeah, I mean, like we've said, obviously on paper, they're the goaltending battle versus the offensive explosion, but both sides have guys capable of flipping that script, and we'll see what we can get. Should be a fun conference series, and you know, we'll be back for the Stanley Cup before you know it.
Absolutely, AJ, and that's a nice tease. We are not coming to you every week in this postseason. We come to you at the beginning of each round to give you a real full analysis as we can of what we've seen in the previous round and forecasting what comes next. So the next time you'll hear these voices is on the eve of the Stanley Cup final. I've enjoyed this postseason immensely, AJ, and I know you have too. So as we look forward to the next show, in the meantime, we remind you, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJ Scholes24. So long, everybody.